So we want to make sure that we're matching employers with Americans that have those skills. And that requires giving everyone the opportunity to gain those skills.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, President of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable healthcare.
In this episode, Business Forward hosted Don Graves, Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Commerce, for a briefing on workforce development in K-12 and adult skill building. In his conversation with New Deal leader and Montgomery, Alabama Mayor Stephen Reed, he answered questions from business leaders across the country on topics ranging from education to equity and workforce recruitment. They also discussed how business leaders can get involved with workforce development in their own communities. We hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hello, everyone. I'm Liz Fairchild, Executive Director of Business Forward. Today, we are very pleased to host Don Graves, the Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Commerce. And we're also joined by New Deal leader and Mayor Stephen Reed from Montgomery, Alabama today. So once again, thank you all for joining us. And Deputy Secretary Graves, I'll hand it over to you for your remarks.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. And thank you, Liz, for the introduction. I want to thank Jim and the Business Forward team for hosting such an important event today. Workforce development is a top priority for the Biden-Harris administration and for the Department of Commerce. I'm sure you've heard the president talk about this. It's because we recognize that the people who make up our workforce are at the heart of our economy. Secretary Raimondo and I are working hard and really hand in hand with our colleagues at the Departments of Labor, Department of Education to champion this issue. We believe very strongly that investing in workforce development is the best way we can spur good jobs and good wages and build a strong middle class. Over the last 18 months, so many lives and livelihoods across the country have been devastated by the pandemic. We're still feeling that today. More than 600,000 Americans have died. Unemployment skyrocketed. And even now, as our economy is recovering, nearly 10 million Americans are still actively looking for work. Investments in workforce development and apprenticeship programs are absolutely critical to getting our economy back on its feet again. As part of President Biden's Build Back Better agenda, the American Jobs Plan invests $100 billion over 10 years in job training and apprenticeship programs through the Commerce Department's Economic Development Administration, or EDA. From millions of working moms to fast food waiters, salespeople, and laid off factory workers, these funds will help provide job training and good paying jobs for American families. The investment targets underserved communities to ensure that new jobs in clean energy, manufacturing, and infrastructure are open and accessible to women and people of color. And it creates 1 to 2 million new apprenticeship slots to strengthen the pipeline for minorities and give all Americans a fair shot at success. And as part of the American Rescue Plan's $3 billion funding that we just announced last week, the Economic Development Administration is investing $1 billion through the Build Back Better Challenge to provide a transformational investment to regions across the country that want to revitalize their economies through growing new regional industry clusters. EDA has also launched the Good Jobs Challenge that invests $500 million in regional workforce training programs and sector-based partnerships that help unemployed workers build skills and connect to good quality jobs and quality job opportunities. At the end of the day, if workers have the courage to get trained in a new career, then we need to be there for them with high quality, affordable training programs that lead to a job. Let me just say that again, that lead to a job. We know that no one can outcompete American businesses and workers when there's a level playing field. But to remain competitive globally, we need to develop a 21st century workforce where all Americans can participate and contribute to the economy. We know that the federal government can't do this alone, and we need local government and business leaders like you at the table, because you're the engine that drives economic growth and job creation. As President Biden has said, it's time to shift the paradigm from train and pray to train and place. And we can only do that in partnership with business and with educational organizations like all of you. Working collaboratively is the only way we can ensure that workers are trained in skill sets that businesses actually need and that position Americans' economy to lead on the global stage. So stay in close touch with us at the Commerce Department. We need your input. We need your valuable insights. And I look forward to discussing this in greater detail during our Q&A session. So with that, Liz, I'll turn it back over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Secretary. It's so great to have you. And once again, I'd like to introduce our moderator for today's Q&A, Mayor Stephen Reed from Montgomery, Alabama, and New Deal leader. So Mayor, thank you for joining us today. I will hand over the conversation to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be with everyone today. Certainly glad to have Deputy Secretary on with us. And I'm looking forward to the conversation. A lot of these topics are central to what we do as mayors and certainly what our business leaders here in Montgomery, Alabama have been discussing for quite some time. And so we've got a lot of questions, Mr. Secretary, that I want to run by you. We'll try to cover as many as we can, but they are well-researched questions from a lot of great business leaders. And I want to start with the topic of what's urgent to employers. You know, we have a lot of problems with infrastructure, climate crisis, and outdated immigration laws. Why should we prioritize, you know, workforce development? What's commerce's role in these initiatives?
Well, thanks so much for that question, Mayor. And it's a great question. As you point out, we're at a really interesting time in our nation's history, and specifically around the economy, where we're dealing with the challenges around our infrastructure, where we have this massive climate crisis that is really an existential crisis. And frankly, there has to be an urgency for our business community, for our employers. We're really focused on making certain that our workforce development efforts are aligned with the innovation that our employers have done throughout the course of our history. Building new infrastructure, decarbonizing our economy, and everything else that we need to do, it requires specific skills. So we want to make sure that we're matching employers with Americans that have those skills. And that requires giving everyone the opportunity to gain those skills. So we have to focus on completing workforce training through access to transportation, childcare, and anything else that they need so that we have, on one side, the training programs, but we're also providing the support that folks need to get access to those programs and then complete those programs. And then, you know, I guess I just add that we're also dealing with the issues related to the pandemic at the same time. So we have to make certain that we're dealing with the challenges that people have, especially those that have had COVID and long haul COVID symptoms. And then we're also dealing with the caring economy. We've spent a lot of time, I know the president has talked about this a lot, that we're making certain that childcare is available, that people have access to care for seniors so that we can free up the millions of people who are unfortunately not able to work today so that they can get the training they need and then get to work.
No, thank you for that answer. I think it's very important that my business leaders and those that are on this call and those who may watch it later have an explanation of why we're doing the things that we are at the federal level. But I will say we've gotten a few questions that have come in from business leaders that I want to share with you as well. And one question came from Kendra Hems, President, Trucking Association of New York, Clifton Park, New York. And the question is, the trades have been struggling to recruit workers and all suffering from a severe shortage of qualified employees. What work is being done at the national level to promote the trades as viable career choices?
Well, it's a great question. And I should just say that first off, we have to make certain that every person in this country has the ability to get into a trade if that's what they're interested in. It's why we're so focused on registered apprenticeships and support for those programs that are providing certification in the trades, especially those that are tied to good paying jobs. We're working with our friends in the labor movement as well. So you know, one of the things that I would point out is the thing that I mentioned in my remarks, actually it was just last week, the end of last week, Secretary Raimondo announced that the Economic Development Agency here at the Department of Commerce is putting out $3 billion in support to local communities. Importantly, that includes a $500 million program called the Good Jobs Challenge. That's really focused on the skills components that folks need. What we're trying to do is to make sure that we're identifying the skill sets that employers are needing, especially in the trades, and that we're working with those organizations that can train folks. We're giving those dollars to help support those programs and make sure that people are getting into the training programs, working with state and local governments, working with community colleges, working with industry associations, as I said, working with the labor unions to support that the application of those skills and getting people reskilled or upskilled for the jobs that folks are needing. And it's something that is built into the core of the bipartisan infrastructure deal that everyone has heard about. It's providing more support for these programs in partnership with the Departments of Labor and Education so that, again, we have alignment between the certification programs, the workforce development programs, and the actual needs of businesses and employers around the country.
My next question comes from Satish Agrawal, CEO of Comtrade International Incorporated in Freehold, New Jersey. And his question revolves around the scarcity of workers now and how challenging it is to get workers. He wants to know, is it coming from stipends? Is it coming from money that the government has provided? And how can they continue to build their business to supply raw material to the mills to support the Made in America theme if they can't get workers? What should he and others like him do to address this issue?
It's a great question. It's something that we've been hearing all over the place. Part of the challenge here is getting our arms around the pandemic. It's something that the president has focused on since day one, is making certain that workers have the opportunity to get vaccinated, have the protections that they need so that they can actually get into the workforce again. It also goes to what I was talking about around the care economy. Part of the challenge is that we have millions of workers, especially women of color, who are in the home and taking care of their kids, taking care of seniors who don't have a place to go, taking care of disabled family members and loved ones. We need to make certain that we're providing the support and resources to help them get back into the workforce and take these jobs. Part of the other issue is that, as we've been talking about, it's the need for upskilling and reskilling. That's why we're so focused on, as I said, things like the Good Jobs Challenge. It's also some of the things that we're doing around tech hubs. Part of the American Jobs Plan, and it was what was passed in the Senate, the United States Innovation and Competition Act, is focusing on tech hubs that would include workforce development component that includes community colleges, partnerships, technical training, and education programs. So it's providing the training, the support in terms of workforce development so that people can enter these jobs that are here and that are coming, but it's also providing that holistic support that so many people in this country, millions of people in this country need, so that they can get away from taking care of their kids, so that they aren't stuck also taking care of senior loved ones or disabled loved ones, so that they can get into the workforce. So all of that has to happen, but we're also focused on making sure that, you know, the supply chain constraints aren't causing problems. I know, you know, the question was talking about raw materials. We know that there are some constraints around the globe right now as it relates to supply chains, and we think that will smooth out over time, but it's something that we at the Commerce Department, and I know the president, are working hard on a daily basis, is to make sure that things like raw materials and supply chain constraints, in addition to the workforce constraints, are managed effectively, and we can get workers back into these good paying jobs.
Thank you so much. I'd like to move on to workforce training opportunities. Again, another hot topic for those of us in government, along with private sector leaders. And with the infrastructure negotiations top of mind this week, what opportunities can business leaders take with these investments to reskill or maybe even upskill their talent? How should business leaders take advantage of what's being provided right now?
Well, I, from the Department of Commerce standpoint, I go back to the Economic Development Administration's efforts. As I mentioned, there's this $3 billion commitment that we announced last week $1 billion is focused on regional transformation. That's the Build Back Better challenge. I talked about the good jobs challenge, and that's really the way to help put people into the skill sets that they need. As I mentioned, it's partnering with state and local governments, community colleges, industry associations, labor unions, and a range of other nonprofits. All of them can apply for that funding, but it's also working with the Department of Labor and the Department of Education to get at the reskill and the upskill issue. And I will say that what we're trying to do from the federal government standpoint is to have a one-stop shop approach, that we recognize that workers and employers shouldn't be expected to try and navigate the federal government themselves, that we should be the ones thinking about the challenges that they're facing. And that's why we're working so closely with local and state governments and with these workforce development programs to make sure that folks have the skill talent that they need to succeed. You know, I talked about the tech hubs. We think that there's a range of programs that any of you who's watching can take advantage of. Just come to commerce.gov and you can get a bit more information about the ways that we can support you.
That's great. Well, with so many national investments being made, 21st century infrastructure, will this open up opportunities for more equitable and inclusive 21st century training for workers within our community? And that question comes from Elena Farnsworth, CEO of The Next Education in Clarkson, Michigan.
It is such a great point. We know that the economy has not worked for everyone. And the president's wholehearted agenda is around building back better in an equitable way so that all Americans can participate. So we're certainly focused on making sure that equity is a top priority for all of the programs. We're prioritizing equity in the work that we do at the Commerce Department. First, we have the Minority Business Development Agency. So for those viewers who may run a minority business or work with minority businesses, the MBDA has a range of programs to support them. In fact, we've put out just recently more than $30 million to support our 36 regional minority business development centers. You don't have to be in that community to get to a minority business development center. You can call, you can access the resources that they provide on the web. But MBDA is specifically focused on supporting the growth of all minority businesses. The other thing that we're doing is the Economic Development Administration, included in the $3 billion that I talked about, it's really geared towards getting our local and state and our regions focused on equity as a top priority. So all of the programs, all six of the programs that we announced as part of that $3 billion have a component on equity. For those that are looking for specifically for credit and capital, Minority Business Development Agency is certainly a place to go. I'll also mention that the SBA, I know there were some challenges around the PPP program and the EIDL program and some of the other things that were announced in the last year and a half. SBA has restarted their portal. They've revamped a lot of the work that they've been doing, so people have much more immediate and easier access to credit and capital. And then the final piece that I'll talk about is a program that I actually ran during the Obama administration. That's the State Small Business Credit Initiative. That program at the Treasury Department just got an infusion of $10 billion that it's putting out across the country with a focus on minority businesses and a focus on businesses in communities that are underserved or that are detached from our economy in some way. So you can certainly get more information about getting access to credit and capital through those programs. But again, come to commerce.gov and you can get a lot more information about the work that we're doing to have a more equitable and inclusive economy.
Well, I'm going to take a little personal privilege if you don't mind, because you step right into my wheelhouse where this is concerned, because a lot of our agenda here on the local level was designed around equity and inclusivity. And one of the things that we have seen here in parts of Alabama and parts of the South in particular has been the barrier to minority-owned businesses, specifically those businesses run by people of color. And whether it be access to capital, whether it be training programs, the ability to scale those businesses and even get into entry-level opportunities, it has presented a challenge that really has cost our economy trillions of dollars, not just here in Alabama, but across this country. And so as we discuss equity, many questions that we had, you know, revolve around equitable funding, underinvested communities and small businesses, as well as access to worker training programs for areas that have felt looked over, left behind, and left out. How do you approach this initiative? And based on what you were just saying a few minutes ago, how do you look at improving the outcomes overall with the money, with the intention? How does the implementation get to where it needs to go for those in our communities around this country that are really dealing with this challenge that's costing our economy workers, it's costing our economy a lot of money, a lot of productivity? How do we get into that through an equitable fashion that you were just touching on just a second ago?
Mayor, this is something I've spent a significant chunk of my life on. You look at the numbers, I think it was the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation, can't remember the exact, but international organization that focuses on economic growth and development, they basically have said that we could have seen a significant increase in our GDP over the last few years if we had had a more inclusive and equitable economy. The Kellogg Foundation says that overall GDP, I think it would increase by $8 trillion between now and 2050 if we have a more equitable and inclusive economy. And it gets back to the point that you made around intention. There's lots of good intention over the course of decades, but it's converting that intention into a reality for so many of our businesses and so many of our communities. I always think about it this way. Americans have hopes and they have dreams. They have ideas that they want to take to market. They have a belief that they can do something, but the challenge is that their hopes and dreams are dashed on the reality that so many of them are facing across the country. What we should be all about is allowing them to have those hopes and dreams and find opportunities so that they can live lives of dignity. So that's what this is really all about, is how can we create these programs that are more equitable? And it's part of this is sort of, as you've said, it's meeting people where they are as opposed to having them come to where we are. So it's simple steps. It's making sure that people don't get turned away when they're applying for a PPP loan or another SBA loan because they lack access to lawyers or accountants or financial management folks who can help ensure that their paperwork is done the right way or that their legal documents are in the right place. It's making sure that entrepreneurs have a one-stop shop so they can come to the federal government or go to the state and local governments so they don't have to navigate every individual program. For instance, exporting. We know that small businesses make up 97% of our exporters, and minority-owned businesses that export could have significant access for cultural reasons and otherwise to a lot of markets around the globe. The challenge is that they don't know how to access our tools and resources. So we have these things called the U.S. Export Assistance Councils that can actually work small business owners, can help these entrepreneurs understand how to export. The problem is that people don't know how to access those resources. So part of what is on us as the Biden-Harris administration is making sure that those resources are available, that we're meeting people, as I said, where they are, that we're talking with folks like all of you who are watching this to understand the range of tools that we have available to you. And again, all of this sort of thing, you can come to commerce.gov and get a whole lot more information about the work that we're doing. But I'm committed, if there's one thing that I have as a lasting legacy, and I know the president cares about this a lot, is that we get out to people, meet them where they are, help them navigate these challenges around equity, around access, so that they can succeed, because that's the only way the country is going to succeed.
Thanks so much. I know that there are a few other topics that, we want to cover, but we're running out of time. And I don't want to get blamed like I do here in Montgomery for the trash not being picked up or things like that and not getting to some of these topics. So I'm going to try to get to a little speed round, and I'm going to get right to the point on these last few questions. And one of the issues that we have is around education. And we've got business owners that are in education, and we've got business leaders who are concerned about their workforce. And they're concerned about whether or not the education in their community is really preparing our students for the workforce of the future. How can commerce and business leaders come together to really provide the type of partnership that's needed to produce the leaders coming out of our education system for the workforce and the productivity that we will need to compete with the Chinas of the world and other economies globally? What do we need to do between commerce and business leaders to really prepare that next generation?
Yeah, it is the fundamental issue of the day. If we're going to succeed in this global competition, especially with countries like China sort of nipping at our heels and making massive investments like their Belt and Road initiative, we have to do a much better job of being coordinated and focused on the ways to get our workforce aligned with the jobs that we're talking about that are here and that are certainly coming. So I go back to the things that we're doing at Commerce through the Economic Development Administration with our Good Jobs program. We talked about that. It's supporting registered apprenticeships and other skills programs at community colleges. But I'll give you a specific example of the type of partnership that I think can be executed at the local level around workforce development. Project Quest in San Antonio, just to give you an example, it was founded in 1992, and that program has helped thousands and thousands of people complete job training through their local community college. The students earn degrees in healthcare and information technology and other high demand fields. The program was specifically created with the flexibility for the local community college and local leaders to understand the needs of the workforce, working with business leaders. But it, more importantly, it teaches them a range of skills. It connects people with career coaches. It helps teach soft skills like time management and resume writing. And we believe, based on studies, on the science, that this combination of job training, the career coaching, works to help ensure that people have the skills that they need. So it's that type of partnership through Commerce's Economic Development Administration that we think will actually lead to the types of skills development that folks all across the country are going to need to take these jobs that so many of you are offering around the country.
Thank you. Well, I think I have time for one more question, and I know that is one that so many of those who are on this Zoom really want to know, and that is, how can they partner with Commerce? How can they be part of the economic development $3 billion grant that was just issued? And when you think about the Economic Development Administration's $3 billion grant, there are a lot of questions, there are a lot of strains. How can we be a part of that, and what should they do in order to be a better participant in these programs and initiatives you've laid out here today?
That's great. And we certainly are seeking partnership from the business community, seeking partnership from folks that are leading organizations locally. First off, I'd say, make sure that you go to eda.gov/ARPA. That's eda.gov/ARPA. That's for the American Rescue Plan. That gives a great deal of detail about the $3 billion that we just announced. We also know that $3 billion doesn't go as far as it might, especially when you're talking about a country as big as ours. So the $3 billion is really meant to lever up additional investments by local communities and states. It's levering up programs all across the federal government, combining them to help transform local and regional economies, to make them more inclusive, to make them more competitive with the rest of the globe. So you can get more information at eda.gov/ARPA. I'd also suggest that you go to MBDA's website, mbda.gov. You can get to all of those through commerce.gov. And the final thing that I'll suggest today is that we're about to start soliciting opportunities for folks to be a part of one of our advisory committees. And that's the National Advisory Council on Innovation and Entrepreneurship, or NACI, as some people may have heard about. That council actually advises the secretary and I on matters that relate to innovation and entrepreneurship. It's a way for folks to provide input on the things that we're doing right, or you know, maybe areas where we might do a little bit better. We'd love to hear your ideas. We'd love to get your suggestions. So that's a way for folks to directly engage with us. But again, go to commerce.gov if you have any questions or if you need additional information.
That's great. Well, listen, Deputy Secretary Graves, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule.
Thanks so much for everything you're doing.
Thank you both. Before we go, I just wanted to give the mayor to the opportunity to answer the question of just how can business leaders on the local level too get involved with some of the proposals we discussed today, and also open to you, Mr. Deputy Secretary, if you wanted to tack on anything you thought of in the last few minutes.
Well, I'll jump in real quick and just say that I think Deputy Secretary Graves laid out a tremendous and bold agenda. And given his work that he's been doing even before he got in this role in the administration, I feel confident that we can really implement these initiatives. And I think whether it's the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the National League of Cities, and the African American Mayors Association, many of the groups that I'm a part of, I think we will benefit from the role that Commerce is playing and wants to assist us in at the local level. And what I would suggest to business leaders is that they get involved, whether it be through their Chamber of Commerce, their business association, or even directly through their local administration. I don't know a lot of mayors, a lot of councilmen who don't want help from business leaders. They may be parochial about some things, but I think we all really want to get our cities back to work, and we all want to see our residents thrive. And often that comes from ideas that are in the private sector because they're closer to the issues than we are, and we have to be open to some of those suggestions and things we can do policy-wise to make it make sense for them on the profit side. And so I welcome all the partnerships, and I think I would speak for most, if not all the mayors that I know, and say I think they would be too.
Perfect, thank you so much. Mr. Deputy Secretary?
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the bipartisan infrastructure deal that the Senate negotiated last week with the president and the team. Just to remind folks of how transformational that deal is for our economy, for the country as a whole. That just as a reminder, you may have heard this before, that the deal makes the largest federal investment in public transit in our history. It makes the largest federal investment in passenger rail since the creation of Amtrak. It's the single largest dedicated bridge investment since the construction of the interstate highway system, so back in the 50s. It's the largest investment in clean drinking water and wastewater infrastructure in American history, replacing all of the nation's lead pipes and delivering clean water to millions of families. So you talk about an impact on the nation as a whole, this is what we're talking about. It ensures that every American, this is something we focus on here at Commerce, ensures that every American, every community in the country has access to reliable and affordable high-speed internet and broadband. It helps us tackle the climate crisis by making the largest investment in clean energy transmission and EV infrastructure in history. It's electrifying thousands of school and transit buses across the country with clean energy. So this is the type of historic transformational investment that allows us to compete with the likes of China that are already, as I said, not just nipping at our heels, but they're passing us in many respects. So we need this infrastructure deal to pass Congress. We need to get these dollars deployed, redoing both the hard and soft infrastructure across the country. Every community in the country will be positively impacted by this, and this will supercharge our economy for the next several decades.
Thank you so much. Thank you for connecting the things we talked about for workforce development back to the larger infrastructure conversation this week. So we really appreciate it. So thank you again to Mr. Deputy Secretary and Mayor Reed. And thank you all for joining us today. We hope you'll join us for our next briefing. We look forward to working with you all again soon.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle, produced and engineered by Alexi Lippman and Alex Pastanen. Thanks for listening. See you next time.